Been studying with the young people the book of James. In fact, we just finished up this week. One of the lessons that I was trying to impress upon them was from James chapter 4, verses 13 and following, where James says, "Come now, you who say today or tomorrow we'll go to such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit. And yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to the one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin." Of course, talking to the young people about, well, what does this mean? Does it mean you can't make plans? No, it's not saying you can't make plans, but the idea is don't forget who's in control of everything. And guess what? It's not you. So as you're making plans, you need to remember God's will in your plan-making process and be open to the fact that sometimes God will call you to do different things than what you are necessarily planning on doing. Have a great example of that from this past week. On Wednesday night, I made a comment to Brent about how this week's been really crazy for me with being back to driving the school bus and having to take the kindergartners home in the middle of the day. And so, you know, it was just hectic and I didn't have a lot of free time. And he texted me and said, later he texted me and said, "Well, I could preach for you this Sunday if that would be helpful." And I responded back to him, "Hey man, I really appreciate that, but I've already got something lined up for this Sunday, so I think I'm going to be good to go." Now, of course, when I said that, what I mean when I have it lined up is it's up here in my mind. It's not written out yet. And so then, of course, wouldn't you know it, Thursday, my water heater goes out. And I've been nursing it along since the flood, and it finally just bit the dust, you know, bit the bullet, it's done. And so I spent most of the day Thursday calling around the various places, getting quotes for having a water heater replaced. And just in case anybody's wondering, prices of home appliances have gone through the roof, okay? It's very expensive. And so I finally realized my only option is I'm going to have to go to Menards and buy a water heater myself and bring it home and put it in myself because that's all I can afford to do. And so Thursday after work, I go to Menards and I get all the stuff that I need, or at least everything I think that I need, and I bring it all home, and I'm working on it until 10 o'clock on Thursday evening, and I get it all hooked back up, and I'm sweating and gross and nasty, and I need to take a shower, and I turn it on, and wouldn't you know it, one of the lines is leaking. So, you know what? It's going to have to leak while I take a shower. I took a shower, I go back downstairs, I shut everything off, so I'm going to finish this up the next day, get up Friday, and go to RP, get the rest of the stuff to fix it, come home, spend Friday morning fixing it, and get everything hooked back up. No more leaks, but now guess what? My kitchen faucet won't run. A bunch of debris has gotten washed down the line and clogged up the filter. So Friday afternoon, what do? I spend the afternoon taking the faucet apart, not once, but twice, to get it all cleaned out and working again. And at that point, I'm thinking to myself, man, I really wish I had taken Brent up on his offer. It just goes to show that sometimes you make plans and God says to you, "Nope, I got something else that you're going to be working on today." And I think that's the idea in verse 15 here, is that, you know, if the Lord wills, I'll live and also do this or that. Because sometimes he has different plans for us. Obviously, that's not a magic word formula for planning things, but it's demonstrative of a mindset and attitude that recognizes that ultimately God is in control. And I need to be bringing my will and my plans and my life into harmony with his will. And you know, one of the things that I've been really impressed by lately, especially with a lot of the stuff that's been going on in our lives personally, is how often God is speaking to me. And I don't mean that he's, you know, whispering in my ear in an auditory voice or something like that and coming and visiting me in my closet and, you know, telling me what to do. But so many things and circumstances in life kind of stack together and you realize God is trying to send me a message. I've been thinking a lot with the situation with the house and all of the problems that we've been having with that over the last year. And I keep thinking, in fact, I've asked him out loud in my prayers, "God, what are you trying to tell me? What is the point? You know, what do you want me to learn?" And maybe it's that he's trying to teach me a valuable lesson about patience, right? And I need to work on patient endurance and enduring trials so that it will build my faith. Maybe he's trying to get me to trust in him more. God, I don't know how this is going to work out. I don't know how I'm going to pay for this stuff. I don't know. But guess what? Time and time again, God finds a way to say, hey, don't worry about that. I've got it. You know? So maybe I need to trust him more. Maybe he's trying to teach me humility. That when my brothers and sisters offer to help me with something, instead of saying, no, that's all right, I've got it, I need to just say, you know what? That would be wonderful. I really appreciate the help. I don't have to always do everything all on my own. Sometimes it's okay to be served by other people, right? That seems like weird to us, even as I say it. Like, I don't like to have other people serve me. But guess what? If I don't allow people to serve me, if we all had that attitude, nobody would ever have the opportunity to serve anybody. And so sometimes maybe God's trying to teach me, you need to let the other person get the blessing this time. Don't be the one who has to serve, but be the one who is served. And that takes humility. Again, case in point, Brent's offer this last week and my declining to accept that. And I was wondering, did I fail to listen to what God was trying to say to me this last week? And I think in that is another lesson, and this is really what I was planning on talking about today anyway, was this idea that sometimes I think we can all be that way. God is speaking to us and trying to tell us something, and yet we have a hard time listening to that gentle guidance and that mild prodding and the patient instruction and direction that's coming from God, can't we? I think we can all relate to that. And I'm reminded as I was thinking about that of a couple of examples from our Bible reading this last month with the children of Israel and the Israelite history and their attitude that they demonstrated that they had great difficulty listening to God. And I want to look at two of those examples with you this morning that are related to the beginning of the time when they went into Babylonian captivity. The first comes from Ezekiel chapter 3. So if you will, open your Bibles there to Ezekiel chapter 3. I think you might find, if you're like me, that some of the stories, some of the accounts we're going to look at this morning, they're not super familiar to us because we don't spend a lot of time in some of these prophets that we've been reading in our daily Bible readings here these last couple of months. In Ezekiel chapter 3, we find Ezekiel, who's called by God to be a prophet and deliver a message to his people, in about the year 592 B.C., So let me just give you a little bit of background because I haven't had a chance to paint that picture for you yet with the summary of what we've read. But in the first year of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon's, the Babylonian king's reign, it began in 605 BC. The Babylonians came into Israel, into Judah, and initially subjugated the southern kingdom of Judah. And at that time, Jehoiakim had been reigning for about 4 years. And he was left on the throne by Nebuchadnezzar to rule. But at that time, Nebuchadnezzar took some captives from Jerusalem, Daniel and his friends being among those numbers, and took them back to Babylon. And 3 years later, Jehoiakim rebels against his new Babylonian overlord. And Nebuchadnezzar, because he had recently been embroiled in a war with the Egyptians to the south, didn't have enough fighting force to go and squash Jehoiakim's rebellion straight away. And so he has to go back to Babylon and muster up some more forces, and he comes back in 597 BC. Jehoiakim has passed away, and his son Jehoiachin is now sitting on the throne. He's only been on the throne for 3 months when Nebuchadnezzar's army approaches Jerusalem, and Jehoiachin says, I don't want to have any part of this, and he just surrenders. And he, along with a vast number of the inhabitants of Jerusalem, are carried away then by the Babylonians and transplanted and moved over into Babylonia, settled by the river Chebar, and they are now living as captives and exiles in a foreign land. And it's to this group of people that Ezekiel is called by God to preach a message of repentance to them, to tell them that they would turn around, if they would start serving God again, if they would forsake their idolatry, God would allow them to return to their homeland. But it's really interesting the response here. In fact, the forewarning God gives them. Let me just read it to you from the text. Ezekiel chapter 3, beginning in verse 1. Then God said to me, Son of man, eat what you find, eat this scroll, and go speak to the house of Israel. So I opened my mouth, and he fed me the scroll. And he said to me, Son of man, feed your stomach and fill your body with this scroll which I'm giving you. Then I ate it, and it was sweet as honey in my mouth. Then he said to me, Son of man, go to the house of Israel and speak with my words to them. For you're not being sent to a people of unintelligible speech or difficult language, but to the house of Israel, nor to many peoples of unintelligible speech or difficult language, whose words you cannot understand, but I have sent you to them who should listen to you. God says to Ezekiel, I'm not sending you to strangers. I'm not sending you to foreigners who don't understand your customs and our law. I'm not sending you to people who don't know the language that you're speaking. I'm sending you to people that you should be able to clearly communicate with. They should listen to you. But what's interesting, before Ezekiel ever goes and speaks a word to the Israelite, God tells him, this is what's going to happen. Verse 7, yet the house of Israel will not be willing to listen to you, since they are not willing to listen to me. Surely the whole house of Israel is stubborn and obstinate. Behold, I have made your face as hard as their faces, and your forehead as hard as their forehead. Like emery, harder than flint, I have made your forehead. Do not be afraid of them or be dismayed before them, though they are a rebellious house. God says to him, I'm going to send you to a bunch of hard-headed numbskulls. I'm going to send you to some hard-headed people. And you're going to deliver a message to them, but they're so stubborn and they're so obstinate that they're not going to listen to what you're trying to tell them, even though it's for their benefit, even though it's for their own good. And so God says to him, you know, they're so hard-headed, I'm going to make you be even more hard-headed than they are, that you're not going to be willing to give up on continuing to preach to them and teach them, even though they don't want to listen to you. So even though they should have listened, God says they're not going to listen because they're stubborn and they're obstinate. I think about that in relationship to us today. We can be like that too, can't we? Even when we're in the midst of experiencing hardship because of our own poor choices, because of our own sin, because of our own rebellion against God, and God in love and mercy and patience calls upon us to repent and turn to Him, to cease from sinning, to cease from doing the thing that is causing us harm. He says, I love you and I care about you. Stop doing that. It's hurting you. Sometimes it's hurting us physically. Sometimes it's hurting us spiritually. Sometimes it's hurting us in both ways. And God is saying, please stop hurting yourself. And yet we're too stubborn. We're too hard-headed. We refuse to listen to Him. We're too stuck in our ways. We're too determined. Maybe it's we're too proud and arrogant. And we think, you know what? I'm just going to do what I want to do anyway. This is what I've always been doing. You're not going to change me. But for whatever reason, we're just stuck in our ways and we don't want to listen to God's pleading to us to come back to Him. And if you're sitting there struggling with thinking, are we really like that? I would just ask you this. How many times have you struggled with a particular sin or a temptation to sin in your life and stubbornly refuse to ask anyone for help with that? You said to yourself, no, I don't need to tell anybody that I'm struggling with this. I can figure this out on my own. I can solve it on my own. I don't need to let other people in. I don't need accountability. I can do it by myself. How many of us have done that? I mean, yeah, a few of you are being honest and raising your hands. I think all of us have. At one point or another, we're stubborn, just like these people that Ezekiel was sent to. How many of us have outwardly repented of something and yet we failed to really let go of our secret sin in our heart? You know, we're told that we're to crucify the old man and that we're to put him to death and we're to rise to walk in newness of life. But how many of us have left that old man hooked up to life support in the back of our mind just because maybe if this thing doesn't work out, I can go back to my old ways? And so we don't cut ties. We don't separate ourselves from bad influences. We're being just as stubborn and hard-headed as these people that God sent Ezekiel to. How many times has one of your family or brethren come to you and in love tried to help you get back on the right path? And instead of responding in humility and gratitude, you responded in pride and anger. Maybe that's even happening for some of us right now. When we do that, we're no better than these stubborn and obstinate people whom Ezekiel was sent to. Let's look at another group of Israelites, though. This is the remnant that was left in Judah after the final captivity. After that first group had been taken off, and then the second group that Ezekiel is speaking to, Nebuchadnezzar finally has enough of the rebellion. He had in that last time when Jehoiachin surrendered to him, Nebuchadnezzar took Jehoiachin's uncle Zedekiah and put him on the throne and said, I want you to reign over this kingdom that I'm leaving here. And you would think that Zedekiah would have been appreciative of that. He wasn't in line for the throne, but he was placed on the throne anyway. And yet, instead of being appreciative and submissive to Nebuchadnezzar, he consistently rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar. And after he sat on the throne for only 11 years, Nebuchadnezzar had had enough, and he had come back to Jerusalem, and in 586, not only besieged the city to conquer it and did defeat Zedekiah, but he tore the walls of the city down. He raided the temple of God and took all the valuables from it, and he burnt every great house in the city of Jerusalem with fire, and he carried away the rest of the people into Babylonian captivity. The only people that he left behind were the poorest of the land, that they could be vine dressers and plowmen to take care of the fields. Jeremiah was a man of God who was left behind with this group. And when that happened, King Nebuchadnezzar, instead of putting somebody else from the house of David on the throne to rule over them, he appointed a man by the name of Gedaliah to be governor over the remnant. And Gedaliah was doing a good job for about 7 months until he was assassinated by a group of Jews. And when that happened, the Jews who were left panicked because they thought, last time we rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar's ruler, he came in and wiped us out. What is he going to do now? And so they started thinking, maybe we should flee to Egypt and seek safety there under the protection of Pharaoh. It's really interesting to me the way that they approach this problem. They don't know what to do, and so they seek God's counsel. In Jeremiah chapter 42, the people come to Jeremiah, who has been working as a prophet of God among them for many decades now. And they approach him. In verse 2, they said to Jeremiah the prophet, please let our petition come before you and pray for us to the Lord your God, that is, for all this remnant, because we are left but a few out of many, as your own eyes now see us, that the Lord your God may tell us the way in which we should walk and the thing that we should do. Jeremiah the prophet said to them, I have heard you. Behold, I'm going to pray to the Lord your God, in accordance with your words, and I'll tell you the whole message which the Lord will answer you. I will not keep back a word from you. They said, Jeremiah, we want to know what God wants us to do. We think that's a good start. Inquire of the Lord. And they even profess to have the right attitude toward whatever response it is that they're going to receive from the Lord. Jeremiah says, I'll request of the Lord to see what he wants you to do, and I won't hold anything back. And notice their response, verse 5. They said to Jeremiah, may the Lord be a true and faithful witness against us if we do not act in accordance with the whole message with which the Lord your God will send to us. Whether it is pleasant or unpleasant, we'll listen to the voice of the Lord our God to whom we are sending you, so that it may go well with us when we listen to the voice of the Lord our God. That's the right attitude. Whatever, we don't know what to do. God, tell us what to do. And whatever you tell us to do, whether it's something we like to do or something we don't like to do, we'll do that. That's the right attitude to have. But then Jeremiah goes and actually gets God's answer. And I'll sum it up, verses 7 through 22. We won't take the time to read all of it. But in short, God says, don't go to Egypt. You think you'll go there for safety, but it'll actually be for your destruction. You're scared to stay in the land, but if you will trust me and stay here, I will make sure that you are safe. And anybody who doesn't listen to this word of mine but stubbornly goes to Egypt anyway, know that that person will perish in Egypt. not exactly the message that I think they were hoping to get from the Lord. Because you'll notice in chapter 43, beginning in verse 1, as soon as Jeremiah, whom the Lord their God had sent, finished telling all the people all the words of the Lord their God, that is all these words, Azariah the son of Hoshaiah and Jehonan the son of Kareah, and all the arrogant men said to Jeremiah, "You are telling a lie. The Lord our God has not sent you to say you are not to enter Egypt to reside there, but Baruch the son of Neriah is inciting you against us to give us over into the hand of the Chaldeans, so they will put us to death and or exile us to Babylon." And so what do they do? They go down to Egypt. I can relate to them too in this regard. I know I've been just like this. God, I don't know what to do. Tell me what to do. Whatever you tell me to do, I'll do. Except that. I don't want to do that thing, right? And I think what's happening here is that these people whom Jeremiah has gone to are demonstrating an attitude that they were only willing to listen to God if they already agreed with what God told them to do. And I would suggest that we demonstrate that same attitude in our walk with the Lord even today. I mean, it's easy to listen to God, isn't it? When he tells you to do things that you already want to do. I want you to work, Josh. I want you to work hard to support yourself and your family. Yeah, I'm not, no arguments, God. I'm a natural worker. That's like, comes naturally to me. I feel compelled to do that. I enjoy that. I find fulfillment in that. I love to work hard so that I can provide for my family. No arguments. Don't commit adultery. Don't murder. Don't steal. Check, check, check. God, I'm good on those. I have no interest in doing any of that stuff. Love your neighbor. I can do that. Maybe it's a little bit more, but, you know, I'll be honest. Love your neighbor as yourself. I don't always love myself, so maybe I don't have to always, you know, there's a little wiggle room there. Don't forsake your assembling together. Not a problem for me. I love it. I love coming together and worshiping and singing and studying. That's not a problem. But what happens when God gives me some instruction that starts to encroach upon some areas that's like my sacred cow? I mean, God, don't tell me not to, that I can't do that. Or maybe he starts telling me to do some stuff that I don't particularly like to do. Be hospitable without complaint. Maybe the hospitable part, but I can't complain about it. Don't be arrogant or boastful or think more of yourself than you ought to think. Be humble in that. Really, God? I got to check my ego? The sacrifice of yourself for the good of others. Put others' needs ahead of your own. Really? Like always? Every time? When you have a disagreement with somebody or they're contradicting you, don't lash out in anger. Be patient and gentle in the way that you respond to them. Try to win them to the truth rather than just win the argument. Sometimes it's easier to just win an argument. How about this? Love your enemies. You see what I'm saying? When God tells you to do things that you already want to do, that's easy. But when God starts telling you to do things that don't come naturally to you, and your list may be a little bit different than mine, but it's an illustration. The reality is, guys, is that if we're only willing to submit to God and the things that we already agree with him on, we are not actually submitting to God at all. If you only listen to God when he tells you what you want to hear, you're not really listening to God at all. If you're just listening to get permission to do what you already want to do, you're no better off than the Israelites here that Jeremiah worked with, who refused to listen to the word of the Lord not to go down to Egypt. And that was despite their prior commitment to listen to him and to do whatever he said, whether it was pleasant or unpleasant. I would suggest to you that we, like them, have far too often already made up our minds about what we're going to do. And if we listen to God at all, it's just to seek validation for what we already want. But we're not listening to God with the attitude of pursuing obedience. And I think to myself, when we do that, we're demonstrating an attitude that says, I think I know better than God. In Proverbs chapter 30, verses 11 through 13, the proverb writer says, there's a kind of man who curses his father and does not bless his mother. There's a kind who is pure in his own eyes, yet is not washed from his filthiness. There is a kind, oh, how lofty are his eyes, and his eyelids are raised in arrogance. He's talking about the guy who thinks that he always knows the right thing. He knows better than anybody else, including knowing better than God. He doesn't listen to instruction. He thinks he's already got it all figured out. The reality is, though, is that to be truly wise, we have to be willing to listen to instruction. Go with me to Proverbs chapter 1. This is how the book of wisdom begins. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of understanding, to receive instruction is wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity. To give prudence to the naive, to the youth, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and will increase in learning. And a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel to understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. If you want to be truly wise, guys, not a wise guy, but if you want to be wise, guys, you need to sit up and pay attention and listen to those who are giving instruction to you. In fact, to be truly wise, you will be seeking out the instruction and the counsel of those who are older and wiser and know more than you. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 15. We see a lot of contrast between the wise and the fool in the book of Proverbs. Notice this. The way of the fool is right in his own eyes. Are you the kind of guy or gal who thinks you always have the right answer for everything? Or are you the kind who's wise, who listens to counsel? Think about that for yourself for a second. When your parents try to give you some instruction about something, do you patiently listen to what they're saying, or do you cut them off and interject what you already know? A wise person listens to counsel. Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 5, a fool rejects his father's discipline, but he who regards reproof is sensible. Later on in verse 14, he says, the mind of the intelligent seeks knowledge, but the mouth of fools feeds on folly. In Proverbs chapter 9, verses 7 through 9, he who corrects a scoffer gets dishonor for himself, and he who reproves a wicked man gets insults for himself. Do not reprove a scoffer or he'll hate you. Reprove a wise man and he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man and he will be still wiser. Teach a righteous man and he will increase his learning. One of the things that I see coming through in all these proverbs is a defining characteristic of a fool is that a fool doesn't know how to, as we've been talking about in James, be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. They don't know how to listen. And if you don't know how to listen and receive instruction, you're always going to be an ignorant fool. A scoffer does not love one who reproves him. He will not go to the wise, Proverbs 15 and verse 12. Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 2, a fool does not delight in understanding, but only in revealing his own mind. Again, measure yourself. When there's a conversation going on about something, a discussion about what should be done, are you the one who's always talking, or are you the one who's listening? Because I think that that should be a good barometer of whether or not you are a wise person or a fool. See, fools are incredibly hard to teach because they don't listen. Proverbs chapter 26, verses 7 through 12. The proverb writer says, Like the legs which are useless to the lame, so is a proverb in the mouth of fools. Like one who binds a stone in a sling, so is he who gives honor to a fool. Like a thorn which falls into the hand of a drunkard, so is the proverb in the mouth of fools. Like an archer who wounds everyone, so is he who hires a fool or who hires those who pass by. Like a dog that returns to its vomit is a fool that repeats his folly. Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There's more hope for a fool than for him. A lame guy's legs are of no use to him. A stone that's tied into the sling so that it can't launch out is of no use. A dog returning to its own vomit is disgusting. And yet that is exactly the way that the proverb writer characterizes a fool. But did you notice in that last verse, verse 12, there's one thing that's even worse than a fool. Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There's more hope for a fool than for him. Proverbs chapter 17 and verse 10, a rebuke goes deeper into one who has understanding than 100 blows into a fool. Do not speak in the hearing of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of your words. Though you pound a fool in a mortar with a pestle along with crushed grains, yet his foolishness will not depart from him. A fool is incredibly hard to teach. And a fool's end will be a sad end indeed. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 16, it says, a wise man is cautious and turns away from evil, but a fool is arrogant and careless, oftentimes running headlong into evil. In Proverbs chapter 1, verses 20 through 33, I can't think of a more graphic picture of the demise of a fool who fails to listen to God's wisdom. In verse 20, wisdom shouts in the street. She lifts her voice in the square. At the head of the noisy street, she cries out. At the entrance of the gates of the city, she utters her sayings. Oh, how long, O naive ones, will you love being simple-minded? And scoffers delight themselves in scoffing, and fools hate knowledge. Turn to my reproof. Behold, I'll pour out my spirit on you. I will make my words known to you. Wisdom, God, is saying, please, listen to me. It's like a woman crying out on a street corner, begging you to hear what she has to say because it's for your benefit. But she goes on and she says, because I called and you refused, verse 24, I stretched out my hand and no one paid attention. And you neglected all my counsel and did not want my reproof. I will also laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your dread comes. When your dread comes like a storm and your calamity comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you, then they will call on me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they will not find me because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would not accept my counsel. They spurned all my reproof. So they shall eat of the fruit of their own way and be satiated with their own devices. For the waywardness of the naive will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But he who listens to me will live securely and will be at ease from the dread of evil. If you want to face hard times in your life, be hard-headed. Like the people that Ezekiel was sent to. If you want to face hard times in your life, be only willing to listen to what you want to hear, like the people Jeremiah was sent to. If you want to have hard times in your life, don't listen to your parents. Don't listen to those who are older and wiser than you. Think that you know better than everyone. And if you do that, your life will be hard, and it will end in despair and turmoil and pain. Not because I said so, but because God promised that that's what happens when we fail to listen to Him. A man who hardens his neck after much reproof will suddenly be broken beyond remedy. So the question that I have for each of us this morning, will you be wise and listen to God when He's speaking to you? Or will you continue to be a fool who has selective hearing? The choice is yours. If you've heard anything that I've said this morning, I hope that you would make a wise choice and listen to the counsel of God.